With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
Good afternoon in Europe and the United Kingdom. Happy lunchtime in the United States. And good morning on the west coast of the USA. This is Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen today, Thursday, the 8th of June, 2023. And wow, what a busy news day once again. Rishi Sunak, the man posing as Prime Minister of the UK, has arrived at a meeting with President Biden at the White House. The whole summit is being widely dismissed as completely irrelevant. And one has to ask just how compos mentis the aging POTUS will be. What on earth does he possibly have to offer? But the very sad headline grabbing the world this afternoon is that four children and two adults have been seriously injured, four children in a critical condition, after a violent knife attack at a playground, believe it or not, a lakeside playground in the picturesque town of Annecy in the French Alps. One of the children is aged just 22 months, and the other two are aged 2 and 3. This is absolutely appalling. Dozens of other very young children are apparently receiving support for the trauma of witnessing the stabbings, which are believed to have been carried out by a young Syrian man who had been granted refugee status in Sweden. So says Elizabeth Bourne, the French Prime Minister. Excuse me. Police described him as aged in his early 30s. Bourne said he was homeless and an isolated individual. He had asked for asylum in France, which had not been processed because he already had refugee status in Sweden. Because he had EU refugee status, he was free to travel legally to France. Police sources have told Le Monde, the French newspaper, that the man had declared himself to be a Syrian Christian in his French asylum application. We don't know any more, and I don't want to speculate. Suffice to say that we hope that the children pull through. That's obviously the most important thing. We hope that the children who were stabbed are able to make a full recovery. I mean, it's symptomatic. It's very easy, of course, to say, you know, he was a Syrian, he shouldn't have been in the country in the first place. That is fair comment. Of course, it's blowback from the illegal post 9/11 wars, the West's attempt to destabilize the Assad government that's resulted in the flow of Syrian refugees. So if you want to rewind a bit, it's not difficult to see what the causes of this are. And we have to look at that. On the other hand, it's also fair to say that somebody who randomly stabs toddlers at a playground is insane, completely and utterly insane. It's very difficult to know what his motivation was, other than pure hatred, or that he was possessed by some sort of demon. Either way, this man must never be allowed out in public again, or at least not for 50 years until he is really rather elderly. I'm afraid to say, I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, but this kind of thing, to my mind, increases the strength of the case for capital punishment. Elsewhere, of course, in the UK, the Twitter sphere is absolutely dominated by former lead singer and bassist of Pink Floyd, Roger Waters, who is performing the final concert of his European tour in Manchester on Saturday night. having been at the O2 Arena in London this week to tremendous critical acclaim. However, his depiction of fascism satirically in the section of the concert lifted from the rock opera The Wall is being deliberately misinterpreted by some as promoting fascism. This is truly, truly bizarre and I think rather sinister, rather deliberate attempt to cancel Roger. But Twitter's going absolutely mad with it back and forth, of course. And so joining me in the second hour of this broadcast at 6:15 p.m. is someone who knows all about cancel culture, and that is Phil Zimmerman, who himself has been cancelled from the Brighton Festival. So Phil will be joining me at around 6:10 to talk about Roger, all things cancel culture. It's even extended to Tucker Carlson, who, according to one report, is now on some kind of Ukrainian hit list, at least in terms of his Twitter account. I've read from a usually relatively reliable source that Zelensky's office has demanded that Elon Musk cancel Tucker's Twitter account. Tucker, of course, now planning on using Twitter as his main mouthpiece following his departure from Fox. And his 10-minute monologue, which I discussed briefly with Patrick yesterday, has now reached something like 100 million views, absolutely extraordinary numbers. And because he was rude about Zelensky in that monologue, Zelensky's office is apparently demanding that he be cancelled. So, you know, the culture wars have never been more intense. They're not just culture wars, they're politics wars, because both Tucker and Roger Waters say uncomfortable things that people in power do not like to hear. It is our duty not only to research these things, but where we believe them to be telling the truth, to repeat and amplify them. So very interesting to see how that plays out. In fact, the message from Zelensky's office went as far as saying that Musk, the person of Musk himself, was a target should he fail to cancel Tucker's accounts. So, meanwhile, Tucker is also under attack, or will be soon, apparently, from lawyers at Fox News who say that he's in breach of contract and was only supposed to go to them. One story is that the aim is to keep him quiet until after 2025. Good luck with that. So expect a flurry of lawsuits on that front. We're here at TNT, of course, we believe in freedom of speech as arguably this, along with bodily integrity, bodily sovereignty, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. These are the most important inalienable human rights. Which no government can take away, try, or for that matter, pressure group can take away, try as they might. Joining me for the first hour is our regular Thursday correspondent, Christian Lander, who I am assured has a hatful of stories to go through. I don't know what they are, so I'm going to look forward to finding out what they are after this short break. My name's Basil Valentine. I'm sitting in for Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk. Our drive time show, 5 p.m. London, 6 p.m. Central European Time, 12 noon on the Eastern Seaboard. It's great to have you with us, and we look forward to breaking down a lot more stories in more detail after these short messages.
Greg Mabry on TNT Radio.
About 10 years ago, My employment contract as a teacher with our state education department was abruptly terminated. And it was because I had the temerity to publicly speak up against a number of issues which I saw at the time were not only affecting my ability to do my job, at a larger level, they also pointed to official incompetence, dysfunctional management and systemic corruption. Pretty much the highest levels of public education administration in the state, a senior colleague pulled me aside to point out a few things to me. He said, Greg, if you keep this up, here's what's going to happen. First, they'll ignore you and trust that you'll see you're fighting a losing battle and pull your head in for the sake of being gainfully employed. Second, if that doesn't work, they'll disparage and discredit you personally and professionally and go out of their way to make your employment untenable. And if that doesn't work, thirdly, they're going to come after you with everything they've got and they'll be out on your ear before you know it. Well, words to that effect. The department is the big machine, my interlocutor patiently explained, and if you go up against the big machine, it will chew you up and spit you out without so much as a buy your leave.
The No-Fly Zone with Greg Mayberry on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good afternoon here in Europe, but good lunchtime in the USA. This is Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen today, Thursday, the 8th of June, 2023. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by our research assistant for the show, Christian Landers, who has his finger very much on the pulse with the stories making the headlines around the world. Good afternoon, Christian. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Basil. Thank you very much. I hope you're doing well yourself. The sun out here certainly seems pretty good today, so we can only hope it all continue for the rest of the week.
Yes, our brief weather watch, looking out of the window here on the south coast, bright sunshine. We do a bit of rain over the next 48 hours, I believe, just to soften the ground and keep the aquifers filled up. That's no bad thing. Yeah, summer's definitely here. So what have you got for us, Christian? What's caught your eye this week? I mean, the absolute swirl of news, as always.
Indeed, a swirl of news is certainly the phrase to use. Actually, I'd like to start off with a bit of good news. In fact, good news is always good.
Oh, good.
Way to start the day. So Anheuser-Busch, isn't it? Anheuser-Busch, you know, the parent company, of course, of the Bud Light brand, is now down to $54 a share. So they've now lost... I think it's 23.9% of their stock
their market
price,
value,
which is incredible.
Yeah, I think that's about $50 billion worth.
Oh, so actually, my apologies, I've got that quite wrong. So it's the sales of beer are down by 23.9% this morning, and they've lost 15% of their stock value compared to where it was last month. So let's just get that correct. So it's literally like 15% haircut off their entire brand as a company and a culture, based purely, obviously, what came out of their sponsorship of Dylan Mulvaney. And I said to Patrick just a couple of weeks ago, how many of the other brands, now, of course, we are in the Pride Month, will also near be affected by this? Because, of course, all the social media icons and logos of all the Fortune 500 companies in terms of their Western companies have all changed now to represent a Pride logo or have rainbows upon them. And all the businesses, as I walked down the high street this afternoon, all had proudly portraying the Pride flag and the updated Pride flag. And I wonder how many people jump on board with the Bud Light bandwagon and go, you know what, we are not going to put into any of these businesses. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the quarters are as we roll into the next quarter and see how much their support of Pride actually has actually hurt them this time around. Because I think there's an appetite actually to sort of damage this in a good way. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And that's the first thing that kind of caught my eye. So good news all around.
Yes. I mean, you know, the face of this individual impersonating Holly Golightly, played by the late great Audrey Hepburn in Breakfast at Tiffany's, I think it was. That's the image that Mulvaney was projecting and that was on the can. I don't think that the average Bud drinker is ever going to forgive the company for that. I'd be surprised if they did. I mean, it's very easy to buy a different brand. You go and buy Miller Lite instead of Bud Light. You know, it's not. You know, it's not hard.
I don't quite know how many of their other line. So I don't know how many other of Anheuser-Busch's other brands are also facing the boycott. It might just be the boycotting only Bud Light rather than any of the other brands. So I'm not quite sure what the effect is of those. I did see that Muller Lite and Coors Light have also jumped on the trans-flag bandwagon over in the States, though.
Right. I know Anheuser-Busch have Michelob as well.
That's right, yes.
And I believe their sales are down. But there are wider cultural, social, educational issues to do with this. And the culture wars are unfortunately in danger of spilling over into fisticuffs. Three people were arrested when a brawl broke out between those for and against the Glendale Unified School District recognizing June as Pride Month and incorporating LGBTQ plus lessons in the curriculum.
Is this the one where the parents have turned up at the school and are taking their children out and they're being quite loud? Yes, I saw that, yeah. And yeah, I guess rightfully right. So. Parents want to be the ones to teach the children about sexual education or in their faith or their orientation. The fact that it's the schools now are not only just teaching it, but the teachers themselves are the ones incorporated with the brand of this this Marxism, this form of branding, this doctrination that's come along and is now just sweeping through the education system.
Well, you know, it's all a question of age-appropriate exposure to subject matter.
Agreed, yes.
You know, we had virtually no sex education at school in the 1970s and early 1980s, let alone anything about homosexuality. I mean, I went to an English public school, a boarding school, where the merest hint of interest in a member of the same sex brought tremendous vilification. There was one boy I remember amongst the boarders who sort of, you know, very quietly, tacitly admitted he was gay. He was a nice fellow, very gentle fellow, and he didn't come in for any meaningful stick, as it were. But in the banter amongst all the others, the word gay was generally used as an insult. Now, I'm not saying we should go back to those days at all, far from it. But the key question is, at what age is it appropriate for people to learn about homosexuality, transsexualism, all the rest of it? My own grandmother came out with an unintentionally very, very funny line that betrays the ambiguity of our language, English. She famously said, "I didn't know what a homosexual was until I got married." So, of course, she managed to produce three daughters with my late grandfather. But she was born in 1905, when homosexuality was still illegal. I mean, it was illegal in the United Kingdom well up until the mid-1960s. It's incredible to think of it these days. You know, Oscar Wilde was...
It is, yeah,
life
absolutely.
Is completely ruined by his imprisonment in Reading Jail and all that. But I digress. You know, personally, I think that up until the age of 16, really, it's fine to teach procreation, the birds and the bees, okay? And after the age of 16, people can learn about other forms of sexuality. I mean, if that was, I was education minister or something, that's what I'd say. Yeah. But this is very young children. Now, this is the thing. This is prepubescent children. that are being introduced to subjects that they quite simply can't understand, you know, that they have
no they're understanding it way context of...
That's right.
They've no frame of reference unless they are actually exposed to sexuality, and that is the deeply disturbing side of all that, really. I mean, just yesterday, in fact, I spoke to a good friend of mine. Her name's Anne, and she was the former assistant and PA to a hardline feminist of the 70s and 80s, Fanny Craddock. Herself and her has reached that age, she's in the upper age limit. And we were just chatting yesterday about life in general. And actually, one thing she said, remember, she actually had on in the background Sky News. And for those, of course, of our worldwide audience, Sky News is, it billed itself as the independent news, but owned by the Sky Corporation here. And as this was repeating, she said something to me really interesting. She says, since I've had COVID, I've been able to slow down from life. And watching the TV of the last 3 years, she says, it's nothing but smoke screens and propaganda. It's all a form of entertainment. The news now is just pompous. It's very Americanized. Talking heads, she was identifying. And she says, it's all just a blurb. It's all just noise. And what's happening is that the true... feminism is being drowned out. The true cases of people in local and regional matters, the real lives of people are being ignored. And that's what the news was supposed to be there for. And now news is just this horrible smokescreen of nothing. And she says, it's about time people actually started getting back to the nuts and bolts. And I introduced her to TNT, and she was listening to that last night when I left. But I think there is now a real satiable appetite now for real news and real information. And when I was Sky News, she was not wrong. It was a talking heads kind of a show platform, and the main topic of conversation, of course, was what's happened currently in the Ukraine with the dam that's now obviously gone, and Prince Harry. And I have to tell you this, I'm not sure whether you saw this, Basil. Yesterday, throughout Sky News' coverage of what's going on with the case of Prince Harry, what their plan was to do was in the evening. Do you remember what happened with Michael Jackson when he went to court? They had a recreation that you could watch the next day on TV with actors. They actually did that last night. So they recorded the whole like court program, but couldn't air it. And then they recreated it like with actors and a full court set with, so you could watch what happened at the show. And it was like, since when could Prince Harry and that narrative be a representative of the Michael Jackson case, for instance? And that it really just shows that the Hollywoodness of the news now, this manufactured outrage, this hype that we are supposed to follow with the reconstructions, actors, sets, transcripts. And it just looked like you were watching a school play because the actors were kind of like a puppet show. That they were, it was all rather stiff. It was like watching Doctors of the BBC in the afternoon. It was this kind of hyperbolic entertainment. And that really is what the news has become. And when you identify that with people, you can see that they do not see it's real anymore. And I think there's a real tangible feel that people need to find the news again. People need to find what's true and intrinsic in their life. And I think that's driving people away from the mainstream news. And like you mentioned just before I came on with Tucker Carlson's success, you're right, it has hit 100 million views. I was just looking at it. It's 104 million views in around, 48 hours of that being aired. And Tucker Carlson's normal show was 3 million. I mean, that reach is extraordinary, that a person can just do a monologue and go out there. Neil Oliver's a monologue and much the same. People want to feel the news again. It's amazing in many ways.
Yes, it's heartening. You're right. People are turning off corporate media, the lying corporate media, as I call it, legacy media, empire media, the stenography that goes on, the verbatim repetition of politicians' talking points, the lack of any meaningful investigative journalism, and also the extreme selectivity of what is amplified. So, for example, Sky News have obviously devoted a lot of time and resources into recreating Prince Harry's court appearance. Now, he is the first English prince to appear in court in hundreds of years or something, but he's got no evidence to support his claims. That's one thing. And it's, you know, how important is it really, Prince Harry, with all the things going on in the world at the moment? How important is it? It's not particularly important. It's a giant distraction, if you ask me. The whole royal circus is a giant distraction. If he wasn't Prince Harry, nobody would be interested. I'm not interested anyway. So, you know, one of the reasons why people are turning off the Lion corporate media is because they're so narrow in terms of what they're prepared to cover. And what they do cover, they cover from a very, very stilted perspective.
No, I can't help but agree with you on every one of those points, Basil. And
just coming back to the Pride situation, Biden has apparently announced, invited thousands of LGBTQ plus individuals to celebrate Pride Month in a high-profile show of support at a time when the community feels under attack. Now, there's an important point here. I know a lot of gay people, I've got a lot of gay friends, they don't feel under attack, not remotely. In fact, they seek to distance themselves from this new, the new version of the Pride flag and the so-called Pride community, which instead of being inclusive, has now become exclusive. It isn't interested in gay men who are same-sex attracted. Originally, the whole Pride thing was about being same-sex attracted. That's what it's, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual. You're attracted to members of, okay, fine. Now, of course, with the trans element, that brings in a whole raft of other issues. First of all, people like my male gay friends are accused of transphobia if they are not prepared to date men with vaginas, in much the same way as lesbians are attacked for not willing to have relations with women with penises. This is absolutely insane. Plus, of course, the whole so-called gender-affirming care, which, I said, as I said on here on a Tuesday with Patrick, is biology-denying. It is not gender-affirming. It is biology-denying. And the number of transitioners now looking to detransition from the horrors they've put themselves through is growing by the day.
Well, the mental health aspect, you know, even going into making that decision, even from an adult's perspective, to make that kind of change in your life is it's a major detour of perhaps how you were born and how you feel inside. I get that. But that there's a certain point when you're thinking, well, is it truly who I am? Perhaps I could have just had some counseling. Could I have understood a bit more about my place in the world? If I don't know what I'm supposed to be, you know, how do I know who I am now? It's a very delicate situation, but when we're putting that upon children, you know, certainly I've seen a tweet the other day what says gender affirming care in some hospitals in the United States are starting from age 3, and you're going, what, for penis testicular
this
removal
is pure evil
for children age 3?
This is evil. This is extremely evil, and we have to call it out as such. The AP is disingenuously reporting hundreds of bills have been proposed, this is in state legislatures across the United States, restricting the rights of transgender people, including limiting their access to certain forms of healthcare. Well, those certain forms of healthcare are castration and mutilation. Simple as that. Irreversible damage, causing irreversible damage to individuals who are not old enough to buy a beer, right? I mean, I saw one meme today, picture of a little girl saying, you know, I'm not old enough to set my own bedtime, but apparently I can change sex. Absolutely insane and wrong on every level. And I'm pleased to see the pushback.
Me too. I want to see that kind of fought in the courts, but essentially to stay a hard line. We will not accept it anyone below this age. And perhaps it needs to be an actual age decision like 21 in the United States. Before they can make that decision. Maybe once the brain is fully formed, maybe you can make that decision, maybe at 25, but any time before that, any time, certainly before 10, is just horrendous.
Here's another twist in the story for you. A school in Derbyshire, the Peak District of England, New Mill School, has done an about turn after encouraging pupils to wear full-blown drag for Pride Day. The head teacher of New Mill Schools has scrapped the drag and rainbow themed non-uniform day after a backlash from parents. The secondary school originally said, we are encouraging all students of all genders to wear something rainbow or colourful on what it was calling Pride Day. They may express themselves by doing something small like wearing a tutu, makeup, or painting their nails, to going all out in full-blown drag. This sparked a backlash from parents and some staff, while Robin Walker, chairman of the Commons Education Select Committee, said he was concerned about Britain's teachers going beyond what most people would see as reasonable during Pride Month.
I just like, what is the purpose of that? To actually have a drag show there for on the school assembly playground, all these kids lining up and dancing and shaking and whatever on a teacher's lap? I mean, where does it end?
Well, you know, this is it. It's you know, it's all about the age appropriateness for me. That's the main thing, and this kind of stuff doesn't have any place in school. It's as simple as that. The Guardian are reporting that Adidas has taken heat from this year over its choice. I mean, I don't know if you saw that one. It had a man in a women's swimsuit. You know,
I did see that. Yes, they had a male, obviously, with the extra elasticated section at the bottom of the groin to allow the accommodation of said penis and sexual organs.
That's right. That's right. We're going through the list of companies here. Amazon has participated in parades and concerts for Pride Month, apparently. However, the Pride Parade in its hometown of Seattle cut ties over Amazon's donations to politicians who have backed anti-LGBTQ plus legislation, according to Seattle Pride.
Interesting. I think there is a backlash.
Apple has a robust presence at its local San Francisco Pride Parade, and also works with a number of LGBTQ plus organizations. And on. It's absolutely obligatory these days as part of your whole DEI strategy, isn't it, Christian? I mean, my bottom line is, I very libertarian, live and let live. I'm only too happy for people to do whatever they want to do in the privacy of their own homes or private clubs or whatever, fully grown adults, be my guest. In fact, I'm all in favor of it, to be perfectly honest. I'm not in favor of is that we are all dragooned into some kind of new groupthink whereby we have to, wave a flag. And if we don't wave this particular flag, the latest version of it, we're somehow dismissed as something or other phobes.
The other aspect of it, of course, is in workplace now. Every workplace, including my own, now has, you know, in terms of its inclusivity policies and diversity policies, if you do not support those views, you are cheap. That's actually a term of your employment. If, for instance, you are a council tenant, you know, if you're a social housing tenant in the UK, it's actually part of your tenancy agreement that if you do not agree with those, you will not be provided a house, or you actually lose your tenancy. It is indeed.
Oh, no, this is serious. This is absolutely appalling. This is absolutely disgraceful.
So I recently applied to work for the NHS as a managerial administrator, and I saw actually within the jobs listings, there was listings for the particular hospital I was going to apply to, and they actually had a inclusivity manager, and the job specification basically was to encourage, you know, diversity and inclusion in the hospital, but it had a tag on it of 65,000 as its annual salary, and I'm going, just to say we need more black people or more people of trans or more people of color or an ethnicity on a particular ward. I mean, is that an easy job or what?
It's absolutely ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. Over £1,000 a week, £65,000 a year. You know, that's getting on for $85,000 a year, you know, plus.
To create a table and say, well, how many people on each ward are from different ethnicity or their sexuality? Have you got to go around and interview them? How do you work out that data?
Just go back to employing the best people for the job, or in the case of the NHS, whoever is available? You know.
Yes, so we might have to import them, but yes. But no, it's just horrendous.
Okay. It is horrendous. So parking that one up for the time being, Christian, what else is on your list today?
Okay, I guess ultimately the big one that, of course, is on everyone's mind this past week has what the has been happening over in the Ukraine, and I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of the boasting of the counteroffensive. Of course, that we're going to have a spring counteroffensive, and where it plays into it. We have a narrative that's being portrayed in the news that, of course, it's Russia, it's the terrible actions of Vladimir Putin. He's the mad, evil, crazy dictator. The new Hitler, he did this. However, that doesn't play into the narrative of a spring counteroffensive, because it's this story where he apparently is attacking his own people. And where have we heard that before?
Yes, the Russian troops are now being accused of shelling civilians during the flood evacuations, according to The Guardian. But we'll get into this. After this short break, my name's Basil Valentine. I'm sitting in for Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk. Our drive time show, 5 p.m. London, 6 p.m. Central European Time, 12 noon on the Eastern Seaboard. It's great to have you with us, and we look forward to breaking down a lot more stories in more detail after these short messages.
You will go nowhere and be happy? The Great Reset may be coming to a 15-minute city near you.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Coffs Harbour, Australia is facing huge crowds in opposition to its proposed 15-minute city. Bravo! There is a local news report.
Mounting concern over Coffs Harbour City Council's move towards 15-minute cities. But some residents say the plan amounts to restricting freedom of movement.
But some are concerned the proposal goes too far, potentially restricting freedom of movement.
Biometrics, license plate reading. Are you going to be tracked everywhere you go in order for them to administer a carbon credit system?
Bravo to the crowds turning out. Bravo to those fighting this freedom of movement, this insane, unscientific, religious-based, fanatical movement. Don't allow government to wall you in to a 15-minute walking city. Fight the Great Reset. Start the Great Reject. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio. Thanks for listening.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
George Soros-backed attorneys include Alvin Bragg from Manhattan, New York, elected in 2021, stated that his office would not be seeking prison sentences for crimes such as armed robbery, drug dealing, and burglary. Under Joe Gonzalez from Bexar County, Texas, violent crime reportedly increased by 15% in San Antonio, while convictions dropped by 17%. John Cruzat became the DA of Dallas County in 2018 and immediately moved forward with a plethora of radical reform policies, including decriminalizing theft under $750, criminal trespass, and drug possession. During his first year in office, crime reportedly increased by 15%, while total convictions dropped by 30%. Jose Garza, elected in 2020 as Austin's DA, has developed a reputation for letting violent offenders go free on little to no bail. Garza released hundreds of inmates from jail over COVID-19 protocols, even though only six people in Austin at the time were known to have had COVID-19. Under Garza, police budgets have been slashed and Austin has experienced skyrocketing crime rates and a record number of homicides.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
Good afternoon in the United Kingdom. Good lunchtime in the United States. This is Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen. Today, Thursday, the 9th of June, on today's News Talk, I'm joined by our research assistant for the show, Christian Landers. Good afternoon, Christian.
Hi, good afternoon, Basil.
And we're about to be joined by a new contributor to this show, Simon, who is a political analyst and has the latest breaking news on the escalation in Eastern Europe. But the tweet that that's just been brought to my attention is from the director of NATO Strategic Communications Center of Excellence, and a high-tech stage, a platform, is where this individual is making their remarks. And to quote, every person in this room is in a war here. Every person on the streets of Riga, capital of Latvia, is in a war. Every person in Brussels is in a war. I hope you all recognize it. We cannot fail. So according to this rabid dog, it seems that NATO is now in an undeclared war with Russia. This follows on sentiments from the dreaded Nikki Haley last week, who said, we cannot lose this. If Ukraine loses, then it'll be World War III. And as I said before the break, some of the individual NATO countries now threatening to send troops. This is absolutely appalling. Christian, over to you.
I mean, over to me, thank you very much. It's just like the US and NATO have no inclination for de-escalation of this.
Okay, great.
What we have here is no real thing. They have no solution in sight. It's the way that the West appears to like these kind of things. They like it dirty. They like it blurry. And when you sit down and examine and study the conflicts of the war theaters of perhaps just the last 50 years alone, if you look at Iraq, Vietnam, Bosnia, Afghanistan, they want a perpetual, never-ending war cycle, a cycle that never powers down. They have the ability, therefore, to constantly sell new hardware. And that's really what I think this is what more it's about. We have the Ukraine boasting about its counteroffensive backed by NATO. We have this massive rearming from NATO. We've obviously sold them aging tech. We've sold them aging ballistics, while we ourselves remake new ones. This whole spring counteroffensive and the dam destruction makes sense for this from a Ukrainian military strategic action point. You know, it cuts obviously into Crimea, and the breadcrumbs of that evidence line up that perhaps there's more. Ukraine has its fingerprints all over that, but the switch from the Western media is the opposite. We don't have a spring counteroffensive in the narrative. We just have that the dam is clearly Putin's fault. He's a madman. He's a terrible leader. He's attacking his own people, and that was always used in all of those conflicts that we spoke about before, such as like in Afghanistan, in Iraq, where we obviously blame those countries' leaders. Libya, the same, that he's attacking his own people. We have to go in there. We have to be surgically.
Well, absolutely, it's always the case that the demonization of the leader of the country in question is absolutely crucial to the manufacture of the consent needed for the war itself. So, you know, Saddam Hussein, no choir boy, there's no doubt about that. He was a pretty dreadful individual.
Agreed.
But he was obviously held up like Hitler, likewise Gaddafi, President Assad, now Vladimir Putin, anyone who steps out of line. To bring us up to date, and I'm going to bring Simon on in a minute, senior Russian commander has briefed Vladimir Putin today on how the Russian forces had repelled a large-scale Ukrainian attack in the southern Zaporizhia region. According to the TASS news agency, Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said earlier today that Russian forces had withstood a fierce attempt overnight by Ukrainian troops to break through the front line and inflicted heavy losses on them. The Russian Defense Ministry said on Thursday evening in a video clip that Colonel General Alexander Romanchuk was explaining how Russian forces had held off the Ukrainian attack in Zaporizhia. Now, Simon, are you with us now?
It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, hi, Simon. Good to have you. Now, I just referenced that dangerous-looking tweet from the director of the NATO Strategic Command Communications. Can you elaborate further on who that individual is and whether or not we should pay any attention to them?
This is very, very important indeed. It's extremely significant. And that's why I called your staff and asked if they would possibly get me on the air urgently. This happened approximately 2 hours ago. And the individual concerned is a man by the name of Janis Sartz. He is the director of the NATO Strategic Communications Center of Excellence. They've been having a conference. The conference is called the Riga Stratcom Dialogue 2023. Now, when they call it strategic communications, this is basically propaganda / cognitive warfare. when he's addressing everyone in the room, there are men there, women there, and journalists. And he's saying, we are all at war now. Okay? So he's not some flunky. He's not some press spokesman who misspoke. These are prepared remarks in direct quotations issued by the official Twitter site for NATO Strategic Communications Center of Excellence. This is not like third hand or fourth hand. It's directly from the horse's mouth. And people should understand, since we're on radio, he's standing on a large stage in a conference room. There's four white chairs behind him. His title and his name are displayed on the board directly behind him. So there's no misattribution here. His personal Twitter address is in the communication from NATO Strategic Command. Now, what's particularly important for people to understand, and this is very, very scary symbology here, is projected or onto the screen in some of their other slide shots, but in this one that I've sent through to you, if you were to look into it closely, you can see the image that's below the conference name on the podium that he is speaking at. That is a robot representation of the two-headed god, Roman god, Janus. Now, Janus did not only control beginnings and endings, he controlled all other communications with the gods, and it was his responsibility to transition from peace to war. And in the Roman Senate, there was a shrine to Janus. When the doors were closed, it was a symbol that the Roman nation was at peace. And when the doors were open, it was an indication that the state of Rome was at war. These are NATO's communication experts. This symbolism is not an accident.
No, I'm looking at that image now. Line illuminated, LED line drawing of the two faces pointing at each other. The one on the right is clearly a Roman figure, and as you say, they're pointing in different directions. They've been separated, as it were.
But it's the podium. Look at the podium. It's both heads on one robotic body.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the one on the right appears to be helmeted, which is interesting, wearing a warlike helmet. And there's a piece covering the eyes.
Exact representation of a Roman legionnaire's helmet.
That's right. And if you notice, Simon, the piece covering the eyes has an SS flash on it. Only one flash.
Yeah.
Doesn't have two, but it's got one SS flash on it. So make of that what you will.
I did notice that. I didn't jump to that extrapolation because it's one rather than two. I think the fact that it's a representation of Janus.
I think that single flash is also used. Yeah.
I think the quotation speaks for itself. So all of these things that we're getting from British and American politicians saying that we're not at war with Russia and we're just providing equipment for the Ukrainians to defend themselves, that has been revealed as total BS.
Yeah. I'd like to know is, where is the anti-war movement? Where is the, where are the demonstrations on the streets? This is a far, far more serious situation than the invasion of Iraq in 2003, when 2 million people took to the streets, and yet there is a deafening silence. I think, Christian, that's indicative of just how, dare I say it, successful the war propaganda has been, particularly over the last 5 years.
Without a doubt. I mean, what we have here is a war that Ukraine can't win. I mean, you have they're emboldened by this counteroffensive that they want to put out there. NATO, which, you know, 5 years ago, NATO was on a point of, well, what is the point of NATO? NATO needs to go away.
Well, it certainly does.
They were talking about breaking it up effectively. And now this is their in. This is their importance back on a worldwide stage again. Obviously, there's the whole European Defence Union as well, obviously under deep discussion and obviously coming into fruition across all of Europe, which obviously Britain, despite the fact that we've stepped out into Brexit, is still a major part of. Now, Britain finds itself again in this point between the United States and Europe. We are now the crux between them. I mean, we are making NATO happen again. We're making it important. And there, here we are, like that tweet just says, and that symbolism is certainly replete there. Anybody who is interested in the esoteric symbolism, you know, it's certainly full of it. This, they are going to go into war. And but like all wars in the last perhaps 50 years, it's not a war that's over in a matter of a few weeks or a few months. They always like their continuation of war. I mean, we haven't really come out of Afghanistan, really. The Syrian conflict is still going on, really. And just yesterday, Kyrgyzstan is now facing a coup against its government. And that, of course, sits on the southern border of Russia. I mean, the CIA and whatever else they've got going on in this Anglo-American empire, they are doing all they can to strike deep into the belly of Russia and to cause what effectively could be another world war. And they all appear to have such an eager for it. They are so they want it to happen. They forgot what war really is.
No, it's absolutely insane. Who do you think is giving this Janus bloke his orders, Simon? Are they coming from Stoltenberg, von der Leyen, or from some shadow government operatives that we never see on the public stage?
No, we obviously have the NATO Council. Stoltenberg is very much a facilitator rather than a decision maker. It seems unbelievable given the level of the comment that his remarks would have been unapproved. But what's important to recognize is where they're being said. And bear in mind that we're only 2 months away from the European Union Digital Services Act coming into force on August the 25th.
Right.
And you go Internet for Trust coming into force. And so, you know, me even telling you this is going to be classified as disinformation and misinformation in a few weeks' time. We won't even be able to rebroadcast this kind of information on Twitter because it's very clear the Europeans intend to shut it down.
Right. Yeah, that is extremely troubling, to put it mildly. Go on.
I was going to say, just coming in on the back of that, one of the things I'd highlighted this week is the World Health Organization put out a press release on the 5th, highlighting the landmark digital health initiative that is due to start at the end of this month. Basically, a pairing of the global health certification network. Basically, it was the COVID, basically, the app that allows you to monitor the strategic operation between people and their group data. And they were talking about how the EU has its global health strategy. Well, these were all going to become under one umbrella at the end of this month, to facilitate travel, tourism, privacy, your internet identity. That is all set to come together at the end of June this month. And listening to that, what Simon just mentioned, it sits there within the same kind of umbrella of information being collated together. This digital health initiative to help strengthen the health security, worrying greatly. I will drop that into the TNT chat so you can all have a look at what that is.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure being on with you. I've been on in the past with Hervé Moric and also your colleague Jason Osborne, so maybe we'll get to speak again in future. Attention to this, obviously, it was very urgent.
No, rightfully so. We can see what's happening with the escalation of what they wish to bring into fruition. We saw, of course, his name is actually Janus as well, which I thought was an interesting element to that.